Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, and welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, joined in studio this hour by Trent Horn. Trent is the author of many, many books, but what may be most appropriately for today, he's the author of Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue. He's also an apologist here at Catholic Answers and speaker extraordinaire, and you can watch him debate in various debates on YouTube and places like YouTube. Are there places like YouTube? I don't know, but you can. They're all out there on the interwebs. Trent Horn, thank you for being back for a second hour.
Always glad to be here, Cy, though you did traumatize me earlier when you were taking my Council of Trent podcast T-shirt and turning the cartoon image of my face into some kind of a puppet.
It just hit me that I could, while you're sitting next to me, I could have a little Trent puppet that would talk to you. And I don't know why that hit me, but
surreal indeed. But
it's going to keep happening now because I find it hilarious.
Well, so, if you want to keep doing it, that's fine. And for those of you who would like your own Council of Trent T-shirt to be able to have your own Trent Horn puppet at home, you can get one if you become a premium subscriber to my podcast, Council of Trent, and that's available at TrentHornPodcast.com. This week, I'm going to be releasing a podcast analyzing what happened with the change in the catechism and Pope Francis and the death penalty. And also, as a bonus to my subscribers, the premium subscribers, I'll be taking their questions on excommunication. And if you become a subscriber to the podcast, I can take your questions, too, on all kinds of future episodes. So if you want to learn more, go to TrentHornPodcast.com.
Our number here is 888-318-7884. Our topic this hour, why are you pro-choice? If you are a pro-choice person, we welcome your call. If you're a pro-life person, then hang on for another time. As a matter of fact, pretty much any other time you are welcome to call. But we want to hold the phones this hour for those who are pro-choice, people who believe that abortion is a right, perhaps, or believe that even if it's not a right, it's legally mandated and they don't want to change that law. If for any reason you have come to the conclusion that it is a woman's choice and hers alone, or hers and her doctor's, as is commonly said, about whether or not a child is to be aborted, give us a call, 888-318-7884. We love talking about it. We don't hide the fact that we are pro-life people ourselves, but we do believe that conversation is a great way to move things forward. 888-318-7884. We start this hour with Chuck in Michigan, listening on 90.9 FM. Chuck, why are you pro-choice?
Hey.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi, Trent.
Yes?
Thanks for taking the call. I've been listening the last 45 minutes.
Sure. Thank you.
I haven't had a chance to read your book yet, but there were some really good questions that came to mind. I wanted to ask you a couple of them.
Go right ahead.
As I heard you talking about reasons and how to evaluate the choice of whether to legislate abortion as legal or illegal, you brought up the question of morality. Mm-hmm. We should consider first the question of is it right or wrong before we look at questions of whether it's actually a human that's alive or not.
That's not exactly what I said.
You're right. I mixed it up a little bit.
I said the question about whether it should be safe, whether we should make a medical procedure safe for someone, we have to ask a prior question, which is whether this procedure is right or wrong, whether it violates anyone's rights or things like that, before we decide if we try to make the procedure safe for a person that's involved.
You're right. Excuse me. I did confuse that.
No problem.
Then going forward, I'm trying to think. There's a couple issues that come to mind. One, United States government allows capital punishment, and it's also legislated by law. We're allowed to kill other members of the human species in acts of war, and I assume that this is done what government thinks and people think of generally as being for the greater good of society, so that an individual's rights as a member of the human species are put secondary to the rights of the community or society.
Right.
In cases where...
Chuck, let me weigh in here. So on those two points you raised, traditional defenses of capital punishment have held, and people defend capital punishment across many different religious backgrounds and even non-religious backgrounds. And that's interesting you bring that up because, of course, on Thursday, the Pope announced a change in the Catechism of the Catholic Church in paragraph 2267, which says that from a Catholic perspective, the death penalty is actually inadmissible because it is an attack on the dignity of the person, and we have other means to protect people from the harm that murderers and others may pose. But traditionally, the state allows the killing of human beings only under very limited circumstances. And usually, either it's the case of the death penalty, where you have a guilty person found guilty in a court of law and under due process, or the right of killing in self-defense. So, you know, if someone's going to kill me, I can attack them, and if they die as a result of my attack, it's justified because I'm defending my own life. So it seems to me that government allows killing of other human beings really only if that other human being is a murderer or serious criminal, or if they're trying to kill you. But I don't see how that would apply to abortion, because I don't know any fetuses that are murderers or criminals, and I don't know any unborn children who are actively trying to kill anybody. So I don't see how those justifications would apply to abortion.
You're exactly right. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. But taking the example of warfare, mm-hmm. it's imperfect. Government enacts imperfect warfare, yet it's still legislated. So I guess I want to get to the point, and my
sure.
point really is something different than this. I bring this up as an example to get to the real question that I have.
Go right ahead.
And so if in law, you know, or by law in war, we'll have imperfect taking of human lives, mm-hmm. species of human race, then we're dealing with an imperfect system. We're dealing here with a kingdom of mankind. And mm-hmm. what we're really talking about here is a moral decision, which is a kingdom of God decision.
But
so
shouldn't...
The question, what I'm
go
curious,
ahead, yeah.
What I'm curious to understand from, and I, because I haven't read your book, and I, this is a something that's on my mind. So how do you look at this question about is legislation and is making it a law really the most effective way to put forth, I think the ultimate goal would be to reduce or eliminate abortions in
yeah,
the human
yes,
race.
Let me answer your question because we'll be running close to our first break here soon. I think the answer is yes. A similar question was posed to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the famous civil rights activist. And they said to Dr. King, you know, look, why are you trying to change the laws on racial segregation? Shouldn't you just change people's hearts instead? Is the law really the best way to go? And Dr. King said, well, a law can't change hearts, but it can restrain the heartless. So number one, when you change laws, it does restrain people's behaviors, usually does. People more or less obey the law. Second, I would say that law conditions people. When someone sees that something is now legal or it is illegal, that very fact, it does condition people, that law is a teacher. We saw support, of course, for so-called same-sex marriage rising before 2011, 2012, but I think it accelerated dramatically after Massachusetts became the first state to allow same-sex couples to obtain marriage licenses. And so when people see laws change, the law does educate people. Now, I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think that we can change hearts. In order to ultimately change the law on something like abortion, we have to change hearts. But we can work progressively. As people's hearts are changed, we can have more and more restrictions on abortion. Those restrictions change people's hearts on the issue, and it kind of creates a feedback loop, if you will. You change hearts, that change laws. Laws impact other people's hearts. More laws can be passed. And then it goes in that way. So the point you made, I think that if we look at it in that way, we see there's no kind of false dilemma or anything in that regard, that we can do both, and we should pass these laws and do what we can in a democracy to get to that point. So thank you for giving a call in.
You know what, Chuck? Hang on, and I'd like you to give your address to Marie if you'd like, and we'll send you a free copy of Persuasive Pro-Life since you expressed an interest in reading it. That's okay, right?
Yeah, that's totally fine.
Okay. You scared me for a minute there. You looked like I wasn't supposed to be giving the book away.
Well, it's your copy you're giving away, Si, so it should be.
I stole this from you. But okay, you can have my stolen copy. Chuck, just hang on, and we'll do that to you. You know, it takes a lot of, we do discuss a bit of science. You even recommended that we root our understanding of our laws about abortion in science to some degree, because science does in fact tell us when life begins, and it falls into the complicated relationship between faith and science. Complicated mostly because I think there's an agenda out there to give us conflict or to foment conflict between faith and science. And I thought you addressed that very well when a guy called before and said, well, because we have religious freedom, we shouldn't have laws against abortion. And it's not a religious freedom question. It's not a religious question at all. And we can learn a great deal from science about how, when and why human life begins. And that's part of why we're having this big conference September 27th through 30th here at the Hyatt Regency La Jolla in beautiful sunny San Diego. Faith and science, friends or foes? We don't think foes. I'll give you a little spoiler alert, but there's going to be wonderful speakers. Tim Staples, Jimmy Akin, Carla Broussard, Chris Check, Father Hugh Barber. We'll have guests in, Stacey Trusankos, Father Terrence Ermond, Cardinal Raymond Burke will be there, and even our guest today on the air, Trent Horn, will be giving a talk. Room block was sold out already, but we got some more rooms at a similar rate, not quite as low, but you can still get a room for $179 a night. Just go to CatholicAnswersConference.com and come on. This is going to be the biggest conference we ever had.
Hope so. I'm very excited. We're going to cover a lot of great topics, and I will be giving a special talk on the human person and whether science has proven we're just a bag of molecules or if there's more to us, an immaterial aspect of our existence.
I really don't want to be just a bag of molecules. I'm really hoping you'll say there's more.
You'll have to come to the talk to find out.
I'm definitely coming to the talk. I'm going to be there for all of them. CatholicAnswersConference.com is where you go to sign up. Come on. We want you to be there. CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
We do our best to keep you, well, connected to all the events happening in our one holy Catholic and apostolic faith from Rome to back home here in the U.S. and around the globe. It's also our goal to help each and every listener like you take this beautiful faith of ours out into the public square with great ideas on making a difference through engaging the culture.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Tomorrow morning, 9 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn, our guest, our topic, why are you pro-choice? If you're a pro-choice person and you'd like to talk with Trent Horn about it, give us a call, 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. We go now to Crystal in Denton, Texas, watching on YouTube. Thanks for joining us on YouTube, Crystal. I hope you saw the Trent Horn puppet that I was doing earlier. Why are you pro-choice, Crystal?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Happy to.
So I don't understand why a woman should be forced to carry a baby in her womb. Like, nobody should be forced to donate any organ or body part, so why should we force a woman to do so?
Mm-hmm. Hey, Crystal, I think I see where you're coming from. And a lot of people, including in academia, have made arguments like this, that, you know, if Cy over here is dying and he needs one of my kidneys, I shouldn't be forced to have to donate a kidney to him to save his life. But I would say that abortion is not like choosing to not donate a part of your body to somebody else. It's more like it'd be more like if I gave a kidney to Cy and said, "Here you go, Cy, you can have my kidney," and Cy is alive and happy, and I said, "Hey, never mind, I want that back," and I ripped the kidney out of his body.
Typical Trent.
the ultimate Indian giver, and I ripped the kidney out of his body, and I killed him in the process. So the connection here I'd make is this, and I'd like to see your thoughts. In organ donation, if I choose to not give an organ to somebody, I don't kill them. I just chose to not save them. And the reason they're dying and the reason they need a kidney or need an organ has nothing to do with me. But in pregnancy, it's very, very different, though. The child who is in the mother's body, 99% of the time, the woman did something, made a choice, knowing it could cause a baby to need her body. And now she's not just choosing to not donate something, she's choosing to have the child be killed by removing the child. So do you see how it's kind of different, how pregnancy is not really like organ donation in that way?
Yeah, but like, I don't really know how legal actions work. But like in the case of, like, let's say a criminal that does or tortures someone to the extent that the person needs a kidney transplant, could the state force the criminal to donate the kidney to the person, even if the criminal forced the person to be in that condition?
Okay, I think I see what you're saying. So let's say a criminal stabs somebody. That person needs a kidney. It turns out that the criminal is the only person who is a match. Should he be forced to donate a kidney to that individual? Well, here I'm not sure. I mean, it's a very rare case. I'm not familiar with anything like it ever happening in the law, because usually genetic matches and things like that, they're very rare. And when people need an organ, it's not because somebody else has done something. So one, I kind of lean in the direction that that criminal, if that person's going to die and they cause them to be in that position, I kind of lean towards the idea that, hey, maybe he should have to give a kidney. I mean, he's the reason this person is dying. He caused this. I lean towards that a little bit, but I do see still another key difference, and this would be it. A kidney, my kidney is not made for another person's body. So if I were to donate it to Cy or to our sound engineers, whoever it may be, that would be extraordinary. It would be heroic, but not obligatory, because my kidney is made for my body, not for anybody else's. So it's extraordinary, an extraordinary heroic act to give it to somebody else. That's not what it's made for. But I would ask this question: what is the uterus for? What is its ordinary, normal function? And here I would say it's to sustain the child's life. That seems obvious from what the uterus is, that that's its ordinary function. And so I would say that if you engage in an activity that is known to cause little human beings to come into existence who are very needy, and that child is growing in an organ in your body designed to care for him or her, it just makes sense that if that child is a human being with a right to life, that right to life also includes a duty for the mother to care for that child. I guess an analogy, Crystal, I could make would be, you know, people say, well, can you force a woman to donate her body to care for a baby? Let me give you an analogy. Let's say you had a woman with a newborn baby, okay? And she's breastfeeding this child. And let's say she's, you know, for a month, she's like stranded in a cabin and no one else can help her. And the only way she can take care of this baby is by breastfeeding. Now, would we say, you know, oh, she shouldn't have to be forced to use her body to breastfeed this baby, and she could just let the baby die? Well, I don't think so. That breastfeeding, that's a normal use of her body to sustain this little child's life. If we see that it's normal to expect a born woman to sustain her child in this way, it would make sense to say it makes sense for a mother to sustain her unborn child with the organs that are designed to sustain that child's life. So I still think there's a key difference there between that and organ donation. Do you see where I'm coming from in that regard?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Crystal. Appreciate that call. 888-318-7884, the number. Why are you pro-choice? The topic. We now go now to John in Cleveland, also watching on YouTube. John, why are you pro-choice?
Hi, actually, I read Trendhorn's book, and I was pretty impressed. I'm definitely going more. I used to be pro-choice. I'm definitely going more to the pro-life. So I just have two questions.
Sure.
The fetus doesn't really get a brain until it's 8 weeks old. I mean, isn't, like, I mean, if when you're brain dead, you're not really considered alive when you're brain dead. I don't think, in the law, you're considered alive if you're brain dead. So why should we consider a fetus alive when it's brain dead?
That's a good question, John. And here's how I would answer it. What happens to a person after they are brain dead? What happens to their body?
They die.
Right, so they start decomposing. They start falling apart, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's one reason that people have chosen, and even individuals within the Catholic Church, even up to Pope St. John Paul II, have endorsed brain death as a criterion for death, total brain death. The reason for that is not because the brain in and of itself is what makes us valuable, because the brain grows and develops throughout our whole life. I mean, you still have a very primitive neural structure in an embryo before it hits 8 weeks. Even after birth, you might start life. I think it's something like 56 trillion synaptic connections in the brain, something a large number at birth. But then it goes up to like 1,000 trillion or 1,000 billion. I don't remember. It's a very, very large number. It increases a lot 9 months after birth. So the brain keeps growing and developing. So it's not the brain in and of itself. But at brain death, you lose what I call organic unity. So at brain death, your body starts to fall apart. It can't grow and develop anymore. So that's the end of your life. The end of your life is when you get organic unity, body stops growing, starts falling apart. So if that's the end of life, the beginning of life must be where you get organic unity. So then logically, where do you start growing and all your parts start coming together? When is that point?
Mm-hmm. And also about the bodily rights argument, I sort of agree with you on the last caller.
Oh, but before you continue, I was going to answer my own question. It's conception. But John, so bodily rights, what are your thoughts on that?
I'll give it to you this way. I agree with you. I think if I cause somebody to lose a kidney, I should give my own kidney for him. I know abortion is different, as the nice operator lady said. She sort of answered it for me. You're giving away something there. She's not really giving away, but still, I'll give you a case. If I go over to a person, I'm body slam him, I got into a fight with him, and by mistake, I become attached to him, according to law, am I required to stay on him? And this caused me that he's dependent on me because I body slammed him. Do I have the right to separate myself from him according to law? Do I have the right? And the only way that I could not be with him anymore is if I stab him. Do I have the right to do that or no in law?
Well, in order to answer this legal question, I think Cy and I are going to have to watch some serious reruns of WWE Ultimate Wrestling, because I'm not familiar with any of Jesse the Body Ventura's body slams resulting in the permanent
conjoining.
Biological conjoining with another person.
Hypothetical, John, but it's a hypothetical that is from the Marvel or the DC universe. That can't happen in our world.
Yeah, I think, John, I mean, we could talk about it in very abstract terms. And actually, I use a thought experiment like this in my book, Persuasive Pro-Life. What if I, there is an old, this idea of being connected to someone and disconnecting from somebody goes back to Judith Jarvis Thompson in her 1971 essay, A Defense of Abortion. And in that, you wake up one morning, you're connected to an unconscious violinist. They need your kidneys to live. Can you disconnect from them? Most people say yes. Okay, can a pregnant woman disconnect from her fetus? Well, no. The cases are different for X, Y, and Z. So in my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, I have something I call reverse violinist as a thought experiment. Because I think sometimes we, John, when we do these thought experiments, a lot of times the perspective you put yourself in changes the morality of what you think. And in most of these thought experiments with pregnancy, we put ourselves in the perspective of the pregnant woman. But what if we changed it around? Suppose, Cy, you wake up one morning in a hospital bed and you find yourself connected to an unconscious violinist. So just like Thompson's example, but I'll give it a twist. The doctor comes in and says, I'm very sorry. This violinist is a member of the Society of Musical Pranksters. They go out, they play music, they have too much to drink, and they know sometimes when they do this, they will prank one another and hook that person up to an innocent person. And guess what, Cy? You got hooked up to him. He knows this sometimes might happen. And the thing is, you're now dependent on his body.
Mm-hmm.
And then the shock of all of this washes over you, and you faint and you pass out. And our violinist wakes up and is informed of the situation. And he says, oh, this Cy Keller from Catholic Answers Live, he has no right to use my body without my permission. Unplug him. And then you die. Does that seem fair?
No, it does not seem fair. It seems like I die in a lot of these hypothetical scenarios that you come up with.
I'm very sorry because that, I just look around and it's either an example with you or one of the cameras in the studio that looks like R2-D2. And I can't kill off R2-D2. He's too cute. You're cute too, but it's hard to get to R2 levels of cuteness.
I'm not cute enough to keep you from killing me off hypothetically.
You could be tied with BB-8.
I do like how you switched it though.
Yeah.
If you're the dependent party, it looks a whole lot different.
It does.
It reminds me, I think it's Rawls, John Rawls, you know, like where you...
Reflective equilibrium, the veil of ignorance.
The veil of ignorance.
The veil of ignorance.
Maybe talk about that a little bit when we get back.
Sure.
John in Cleveland, thank you so much for that very thoughtful call. We'll be right back with more right after this.
This is Bishop James Conley of the Diocese of Lincoln. Keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live. Talking about abortion can be scary, but so is anything with which you're unfamiliar. People need to learn how to talk about abortion in ways that inspire confidence in the truth of the pro-life position. We must talk about abortion because we are afraid. Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, is the new book by apologist Trent Horn that teaches you to face those fears, to engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue with the goal of persuading others. Field-tested on college campuses, Persuasive Pro-Life will help you to change people's hearts and minds and begin to build up a pro-life culture in today's world, one person, one conversation at a time. Order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue today by calling 1-888-291-8000, going to Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore in your area. Also available as an ebook.
In a culture that worships the pursuit of sexual pleasure, the Catholic Church's teaching on contraception can seem archaic and unintelligible. Its critics say it is outdated, theologically unfounded, and even harmful. And even faithful Catholics can have difficulty explaining this moral teaching. Catholic Answers is out to change all that. That's why we've just released Trent Horn's dynamic new DVD, The Case Against Contraception, using scripture, papal and magisterial teaching, natural law, and new insights provided by social science and medicine. Trent put forward a compelling case for Catholic teaching with his trademark charity and persuasive graciousness. Be prepared to give a defense. Order your copy of The Case Against Contraception today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging onto the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders. What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic? Let's talk about it on Call to Communion tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn is our guest this hour. We're asking our callers, why are you pro-choice? If you are a pro-choice person, we reserve this entire hour for you. If you'd like to tell us about why you have come to the conclusion that you are a pro-choice person, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Whenever the topic of brain death comes up on the program, I want to go back to it just real quick to make sure people understand what we're talking about. We're not talking about a coma. We're not talking about what's sometimes called a vegetative state. Brain death is death.
Brain death is the complete cessation of electrical activity in the brain.
And you are not alive.
Right. Now, some people try to argue that a person dies at the cessation of upper brain death, where you in the upper brain. But the person is still alive. Their medulla is still functioning. It's coordinating bodily activities.
Right.
And sometimes those upper brain death advocates, they're arguing to try to say that people in a persistent vegetative state are dead when clearly they are not. They can still take in food by a feeding tube and
right.
other things like this. No, and this is something, as I referenced, you can read online. Pope St. John Paul II spoke about this, I believe, at a conference on transplants. That total brain death refers to the complete irreversible cessation of electrical activity in the brain. And then
and
from that
not
point...
not coming back from that.
No.
No one is.
No. And so...
Not in this life, anyways.
No.
The resurrection.
There was one guy who managed to pull it off, and that's why he's pretty important in Catholicism.
Yeah.
So...
And it even took him 3 days.
Yeah, even took him 3 days. He is busy with other stuff along the way.
He was doing very important things. Yes, Father Hugh always reminds me of that. Yeah. Holy Saturday is the most important day of the calendar for millions and millions and millions of people.
Yeah, he's not lollygagging, preaching the spirits in prison.
That's right.
Thank you, First Peter.
Again, thanks again to John from Cleveland for that call. Why are you pro-choice? Our topic this hour, and we go now to John in Indianapolis, listening on the Catholic Answers app. Thanks for downloading the app on your phone, John. Why are you pro-choice? John in Indianapolis?
Hi. Thanks for taking me call. Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Happy to take your call. Why are you pro-choice?
Yes, I think that when it comes to the dangers pregnancy has for a woman, it really comes down to a conversation between her and her doctor as to where that balance needs to be drawn. Some people are having extreme risks associated with the pregnancy or other compromising situations that it's really just up between them and their doctor as to how far they're willing to.
Oh,
hello.
Did we lose you?
John, are you there?
So,
yes. What?
Okay, here you are. Okay,
yeah, John, you're kind of coming in and out on us, but your point is that if I take it correctly, that you would approve of abortion in a situation where the pregnancy was endangering the life of the mother. Is that what you're getting at?
Not just endangering. I would say even putting them at risk of other permanent effects if they know that they're prone to, say, dangerous hernias, if they're prone to, like if they've had extremely risky pregnancies prior and the doctor thinks that another pregnancy might kill them.
Okay.
Even if they don't have any evidence of it yet. Or even in cases of people with severe cases of depression where they think that the hormones might cause the person to become suicidal again.
Trent,
like
how do we respond to that? Is the baby's life maybe more important than the mother's life in these cases?
Well, John, I think that's the first question we have to answer. And I think that's a primary one before we talk about whether abortion is acceptable if a woman's health or life is in danger and how we should respond to that. Because we have to ask, look, is the unborn a human being or not? If the unborn is a human being, then we do have two lives we have to balance who both have equal interests. But if the unborn is not a human being, then it doesn't matter whether it's a health reason or a social reason. The reason doesn't matter at that point if the unborn is not a human being. But, John, what do you think of this premise to start from? If the unborn child, if the fetus or embryo is a human being with the same basic rights as you or I, then should we treat the child with having equal interest to the mother? Should we treat both mother and child equally in trying to determine what we should do if the fetus or embryo is a human being?
I would probably not agree with you on that.
Okay, well, that's helpful then. So we can just start with just the presumption, even if the child were a human being, we may not treat them equally. Here's a concern that I have. The argument you seem to be making is that, well, even if this child is a human being, a woman has a right to protect her health, and so she can obtain an abortion if she feels like her health is endangered. But to me, when we look, there's actually this is a defense that was raised in early. Sorry to go on a historical digression here. In 19th century English maritime law, so the law of the sea. In the 19th century, there were five sailors, who were stuck in a life raft, and they were worried they were going to starve to death, and they thought they were going to die. So they found the weakest guy among them, the cabin boy. I think his name was Richard Parker, actually. And they killed him so that they wouldn't starve to death. They were later rescued and then put on trial. And their defense was, well, we killed him because we were going to die if we didn't. We had no food. We had no supplies. And the court said, no, necessity is not a defense for murder. That even if you need to kill someone else to protect your own life or health, that's not a defense for taking the life of another human being. So I guess, John, I would make a distinction here that let's say so we have a pregnant woman. We have the child. With born people, we don't allow killing another born person to, protect my health or protect my life, things like that. Though we do allow actions that could result in another person's death without intending to kill them to protect life or health. Like if someone's trying to kill me, I shoot them to stop them. Or with pregnancy, even the Catholic Church allows the removal of an ectopic pregnancy where the child dies unintentionally in order to save the mother's life. So I guess those are two different things I'd raise. The difference between acting to combat a threat and the child dies unintentionally versus directly killing the child. Because it seems to me you're arguing for the mother could have an abortion just out of worry for any kind of a health risk. But, I mean, you would probably agree, should we allow parents to kill their born children? Since, you know, what about postpartum depression? You know, there's a small risk your child will grow up and murder you, you know? Do you see where I'm saying that if we don't allow killing for born people for this reason, I don't see how it carries over to the unborn?
Well, it was interesting you brought up self-defense there, because in that sense, we do, to some extent, allow it. If somebody is threatening you with grievous bodily injury,
right,
you are able to use deadly force to stop it, even if you don't intend to kill them, if you're trying to stop the threat. And so it seems to me like the cases of pregnancy I described could fall under that.
I'm not so sure, because there's what I was talking about, cases of necessity versus self-defense. Now, there are cases where someone is actively trying to kill me, and cases where the presence of somebody else is going to kill me. Sigh, I have to kill you again. For example, if Sai Kellett and I were on the Catholic Answers cruise and the boat sank, which does not happen on Catholic Answers cruises, sign up at CatholicAnswersCruise.com. So we're on the lifeboat and we managed to survive, but the lifeboat or the dinghy or whatever, it's leaking. It can only support two of us, and we're going to, you know, die in frigid water.
Caribbean water. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Shark infested.
Okay, there we go.
So if Sai and I are in the boat and it's sinking,
yeah,
because our weight is too much, I would not be justified in pushing Sai out of the boat in order to save my own life. But if Sai had gone crazy with thirst and was coming at me, then I would be justified in trying to repel him, even if he were to die. So that's the difference that I would make there in cases of necessity versus self-defense. So when we apply that to pregnancy, I think we would see that most of this is not the case where the child is acting in a malicious way to attack the mother. There's usually some kind of health complication. Her blood pressure has risen, or the placenta has detached from the wall of the uterus and is blocking the cervix. That what we would do is we would always try to find a nonviolent means to resolve the situation. But if we couldn't, we might have to directly resolve the medical pathology, knowing that the child might die unintentionally. And a good resource I'd recommend for that would be an essay by Father Tad Pahulcek. It's called When Pregnancy Goes Awry. When Pregnancy Goes Awry, and he talks a little bit about that more at length. In that essay, we're talking, you know, distinguishing these different cases. So I definitely recommend checking that out.
Thanks, John. I appreciate that call very much. Is it weird that I take some kind of strange comfort in the fact that you sank an entire ship, probably killed off everyone else at Catholic Answers, and I survived at least to get into the boat this time?
Yeah, you made it to the end of Hunger Games, so
yeah.
You know.
Like, why do I take a strange comfort in that?
I don't know. Maybe, you know,
I feel like I'm moving up.
Moving up in the world, yeah.
Hey, you got this great DVD, and I want to tell people about
it.
The Case Against Contraception, Trent's DVD, that's really timed to coincide with the 50th anniversary of Humanae Vitae, which we are promoting. We try every day to be promoters of Humanae Vitae and the Church's teaching on the beauty of marital conjugal love and how to appropriately exercise that. You'll really like the case for contraception in that vein. We have this summer, we have celebrated already the 50th anniversary of Humanae Vitae. We're in the second 50 years of it now, and it feels like we're in many ways the Church is just getting started in sharing the good news about marriage that she carries within herself. You can get free shipping within the continental United States until midnight tonight in honor of Trent being here with us on this show. Just go to shop.catholic.com, order the DVD, The Case Against Contraception, and get free shipping on it right now until midnight.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I come from the other side of the tracks, see? My uncle used to have slot machines. Put one nickel in and it emptied. And I brought him home in a bag, and my mother looked at me. Where did you get all that money? I said, I won them. You didn't win them. He fixed the machine. I didn't care if he fixed the machine or not, you know?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Why are you pro-choice? This hour, we are asking anyone who is pro-choice. If you'd like to discuss it with us, give us a call, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Trent Horn is our guest this hour, and we're going to keep moving to try to get as many folks as we can in before the top of the hour. Phil in Iowa, why are you pro-choice? Phil? Hi, Phil. Are the phones working in Iowa? No? All right, Phil, we're going to come back to you. Don't give up. Sounds like he might be struggling to use the, you know, get the phone to work right. But Judy in Waco, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Why are you pro-choice, Judy?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I'm pro-choice because I believe that if we don't have legal abortions, then there's going to be women that are exposed to illegal abortionists, quacks, as you would say, and we're going to have women that are dying.
Mm-hmm. So, Judy, you think the answer that some women may choose to go have unsafe abortions, you think that...
Yes,
that you
and
think...
I know this from experience.
You think that the best...
Not my personal experience, but my father was a law enforcement officer, and in the 60s, he had a man that operated an independent motel on the north side of Waco, and came to him concerned because there had been people renting a room weekends, leaving lots of bloody sheets and bloody towels.
Oh, wow.
And he was concerned that there was something going on. And they staked it out, and sure enough, there was a man performing illegal abortions.
Wow.
And when they caught the person that he was performing the illegal abortion on actually nearly bled to death. And she wasn't able to have children. And her father was actually a very important person in Waco, and she was afraid to tell her parents.
Right. No, that's very sad to hear about, Judy, and to hear these details about what happens when people try to take violent solutions to difficult life problems and go and see people like this, like illegal abortion providers. I agree with you that it's very disturbing. So I think the question we have to ask is, what do we do with these people involved? What is the best solution that we should come up with? And when it comes to an unintended pregnancy, would you agree we have primarily, well, I guess really we have three people involved. There's a third person here nobody ever talks about. We probably should talk about them more. In an unintended pregnancy, we have the woman who is pregnant, the man who impregnated her, and the child who now exists. So we've got those three people, right?
Well, you've got the people that prey on these women too.
Right. Well, these are the secondary elements, like the people who will offer abortion services, offer illegal services, and there are people who
because
will offer.
But there's not legal abortion because they don't have access at the time. State of Texas did not offer legal abortion services.
Judy, let me ask you a question. For anything that is illegal, is there also a black market for that thing? For example, murder is illegal, but there's still a black market in hitmen. Drugs are illegal, but you can find a black market for illegal drugs. For anything that's illegal, there will be a dangerous black market, right?
you're changing the subject. We're talking about why I am pro-life. We're not talking about murder.
Do you mean pro-choice?
Pro-choice, excuse me. You're changing the subject on me.
Well, here's what I'm trying to understand. You're saying you think abortion should be legal so that it's safer,
yes,
for the mother to end the life of her child.
Yes, so she has the right to counseling, and she can make the choice under safe, she has access to counseling, and if she makes that choice, she gets to go into a clinic that's safe.
Judy, why should we care?
Between her and a medical expert.
Judy,
psychologist.
Why should we make it safer for big people to hurt little people? Why?
I'm talking about a person that is emotionally charged, that she, mm-hmm, they don't know where to turn. Maybe the father of the child has stepped away from the picture. I'm talking about being able to have access to medical and psychological counseling.
Judy, let me ask you another question, Judy. Can we offer medical and psychological counseling, medical treatment, psychological counseling, support? Can we offer those things in a way so that both the mother and the child live?
We can.
Why don't we only do that then?
Because a woman has the right to choose.
Okay, Judy, if someone makes a choice, should they have to face the consequences of their choice?
That's a moral issue, and I'm not going to pass judgment on anybody.
You're not going to pass judgment on anybody. Do you think it's wrong to make abortion illegal?
Yes, I do.
Aren't you passing judgment? Well, Judy, here's how I feel.
I didn't ask how you feel. You interrupted me before I got to finish speaking.
Go right ahead.
Didn't you? You interrupted me.
Go ahead.
So let me finish my sentence. I believe that impoverished and very young women will not have the opportunity to get access to things like Planned Parenthood, other agencies that will offer them the counseling, the guidance, and the opportunity to say, yes, you can have your child. I mean, a lot of young, impoverished women may not even know how they got pregnant.
All right, well, let me
jump. Those are the facts of life.
Okay, well, let me jump in here, Judy, because I think we have to get back to the main point with our disagreement. I know you said, well, you're not passing judgment and morality, but at the same time, I believe that we should make it illegal for human beings to kill other human beings. And you said that it's wrong to make abortion illegal in that regard. So my question is this, your argument, this is the logic you're arguing from, and the logic does not make sense to me. When some people commit crimes, they might get hurt when they commit crimes, including the crime of ending a child's life. So my question for you is, among born people, do we ever say, let's make it safer for this born person to kill another born person? Do we ever do that among born people?
I'm sorry, repeat it. Repeat your
do
question.
We ever make it legal so it's safer for one born person to kill another born person? Do we ever do that?
No, that's illegal.
Well, why?
You are talking about the state of Texas, right?
I'm just talking about society in general. So you agree we shouldn't make it legal?
You have to be more specific. You
fine.
Can't,
and
you can't kill another human person. That's homicide.
Absolutely. Is the human being in the womb, what a woman is pregnant with, is that a person?
The state of Texas does not consider a child in a womb a person.
Could the state be wrong?
That's the way the law is.
So let's say you and I...
If you want to change that, they have, you're going to have to go to your legislatures and get the law changed.
Okay, so the law could be wrong. Right?
You know, if you know, the baby can't live outside the womb, that's why we have neonatal units. So if they're born prematurely, mm-hmm. you know, a baby can live at a pound and a half if it has the right, you know, medical care.
But it can also live...
But again, you're changing the subject.
How am I changing the subject? I'm just trying to probe.
Because we're talking about premature babies and us killing babies instead of talking about pro-choice, which is why I called in.
Okay. I'm actually not changing the subject because pro-choice involves the choice to have an abortion, right?
Talk about your opinion when I called in to express my choice.
Cool. Yeah, and you have your opinion. But I think that what's important here is we are talking about a very, very important issue that has two big stakes involved, that if those who identify as pro-choice are right, then people who are pro-life are imposing morality on women and hurting women. But if pro-life people are right, then those who identify as pro-choice are imposing their morality on unborn children, and children are being violently killed, over a million of them every year. So it's big stakes here that are involved. And so those of us who disagree, we have to get to the root of our disagreement. And I think the root of our disagreement, what you and I have gotten to, is not so much about abortion being legal or illegal or the safety involved. What we're talking about now is, does abortion kill a person or a human being? Because we don't make it legal so it's safer to kill human beings. We agreed with that with born people. Now we got to talk about whether the unborn are human beings. And so to me, that is the center that we need to focus on. And the two issues you brought up, I'm happy to discuss, you know, the state of Texas or whoever, the law says a baby isn't a human being. Well, the law could be wrong. I say we change it. The law used to be wrong about black people when it said that they were only 3/5 of a person or that they could be slaves. Laws can be wrong. Second, my other point, and I'm fine to go back and forth with you on, why does it matter if a child can only survive outside of the womb at a certain point, like viability? The child is growing and living and they're healthy in the womb. And if that's the case, what right do we have to take them from the only safe place they can live and kill them? That just doesn't make sense to me.
Judy? Judy? No?
Line sounds open, but...
Judy, did you want to make a response to Trent? Well, I don't know. I don't know because I was a little slow on the button, so I wanted to make sure I gave Judy a chance. A fascinating conversation, Trent. And Judy, I will say this, since it does appear that Judy is not currently there, but thank you for that call, Judy. And for sharing why you are pro-choice. But it struck me just as the listener, Trent, mm-hmm. Pro-choice means in favor of the choice to abort babies. And I felt like we weren't closing that circle with Judy.
Well, and that's why I think language is so important in this debate, what we're talking about here. People have, you know, accused me of, well, you're changing the subject. When we talk about a disputed moral issue, like whether abortion is right or wrong, we have to compare it to an issue where we know what's right or wrong. To me, abortion is very simple. Abortion is an action that expels or removes an unborn child from the womb with the intention of ending their life. So abortion is about ending the life of a human being who's in the embryonic or fetal stages of life. So, I mean, if you just describe it dispassionately enough, that is what abortion is. You cannot get around that. So I'd say, well, do we ever end born human beings for these reasons? And back alley abortions came up a lot in these 2 hours. And my main argument is clear. We'd never make it legal so it's safer for big born people to kill little born people. We never do that with born people.
No.
So why should we make it legal so it's safer for big born people to kill little unborn people? The moral logic just makes no sense to me.
Trent Horn has been our guest. Thanks, Trent. I really appreciate your work over the last 2 hours.
No problem. Thank you, Si.
You can get his book, Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issues, or his new DVD, The Case Against Contraception, at shop.com. shop.catholic.com, and there are deals on both of those that you can find out about there if you go to shop.catholic.com. Tomorrow, Tim Staples is in for 2 hours of open forum. Any question that you've got on the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church is welcome. We'll see you then, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.